This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Thanks for being here. Another busy week. A lot of different topics that we'll be covering on the program this week. And we begin with 2nd District Congressman Cliff Bentz joining us from Eastern Oregon. Congressman, thanks for being on today.
Kyle, it's great to be with you. Thanks for the opportunity.
And I understand it's nowhere near 58 degrees where you are right now.
No, but it's not as bad as it has been. I think it's somewhere in the 30s, so that's great.
Well, let's talk about a lot of different things. I know that you recently had a trip to the southern border. I'm curious more specifics about where you went and what you saw there and kind of your evaluation of our southern border situation in the U.S.
Well, our southern border situation is horrid. It's awful. It's terrible. It's a humanitarian disaster and a disaster for the United States. As far as where I went, this is my fourth trip down to the border. I went with 63 other Congress men and women. I left here on January 2nd. January 3rd, we got to San Antonio and then took a 2.5-hour bus ride out to Eagle Pass on the border, Eagle Pass, Texas, and we all got out of the 2.5-hour drive on the bus and walked down to a huge crowd of press and on the Rio Grande River. The cartels had conspired to reduce the flow of folks coming across the river down to just 20 or 30 that we saw while we were there. Usually it's in the hundreds, if not the thousands. And the interviews with the local sheriffs, local ranchers, local Border Patrol people were uniformly shocking, and the challenge those people are facing, the challenges are just amazing. I mean, it's hard to communicate when what happens when you have literally tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people pouring into your community, and that's what's happening. And the Biden administration is totally on board with more and more people coming in, and it's ridiculous, and it needs to stop.
What was the reaction you heard from authorities there in Texas about just some of the impacts that this is putting on them?
Well, the impact in just trying to keep people fed and clothed and not getting into trouble is huge. I mean, if you have 10, 15,000 people camped on a hillside in Texas, which is the truth, and they're here and they're there and they're everywhere, and how in the world to manage those thousands upon thousands of people is a huge challenge for Texas and Arizona and California and Louisiana. In fact, every state to a lesser degree when you're further away. It's often said that every state's a border state. That's true. And New York and Illinois are definitely finding that out as Texas ships people up there so they can start getting on board to try to change this. But the challenge to the law enforcement, the challenge, local rancher, we had lunch with him, and he was explaining how scary it is to go outside and have people traipsing through their ranch, and they don't want to leave anybody home by themselves. I mean, it's a huge challenge for everybody down there.
And what do you see happening in the near future on that, given the administration's stand?
Well, not enough, and that's the problem. The administration has given, frankly, no help in doing what they could do with the stroke of a pen. With the stroke of the pen, the president could reinstate the Remain in Mexico policy and instantly reduce the number of people coming across the border by 70, that's 70%. And about between 60 and 70% of the people coming across the border, which some people estimate to be between 5 and 8 million people over the past 2.5, 3 years during the Biden administration. 70% are men, young men looking for work, and not families, not people that are in any crisis when it comes to how they're being treated in their country, other than their economy's bad. That's not a reason to be handed asylum or parole. Yet the Biden administration continues to do this. So that we in Congress are trying every different angle we can, but the bill that we passed, H.R. 2, has languished over in the Senate for 9 or 10 months now, moving nowhere, which if it were to pass as a law, then we would have a firm foundation to slow this this tsunami of immigrants down.
What are you hearing about where they are coming from? I know a lot of people would tend to initially think it's Mexico, but I'm understanding that it's a lot of other places, sometimes very much farther away as well.
Well, that's absolutely true. There's about 150, that's 150 countries represented in those who are coming across the border. People are flying into Mexico from all around the world, China, Malaysia, Haiti, and then traipsing up to the border and coming right in. And so this is a huge challenge. The people coming out of Mexico, they are almost instantly taken back into Mexico. The Border Patrol said, in fact, that they'd rather be letting the people from Mexico in and keeping the people from further south out. And they say so because they think that the people from Mexico are more aware of the type of work and other things that need to happen in the U.S. But they're not allowed to stay in. The moment they find out that you're from Mexico, the Border Patrol will take you back. But that's not the truth of people from Venezuela, Nicaragua, and other Central American countries, not to mention those other countries I mentioned earlier.
We're going to cover a number of things here during our time. The Homeland Security Secretary has been under fire in recent times. Your thoughts about that situation?
Right. Marjorie Taylor Greene bought a set of articles to impeach him. I voted to move those articles back into her committee so they could add in two or three of the crimes that she'd left out that he has committed, so that the articles of impeachment, which I think we're going to vote on next week or the week after, would be complete. And we could better argue to the Senate, because, as you know, an impeachment set of impeachment articles in the House is merely an indictment. It's not a conviction. So the Senate operates the trial and the conviction of Secretary Mayorkas, should we determine that he deserves to be impeached. On the facts that I have been given, he should be impeached, and should the matter reflect the articles, what I understand will be in them, I'll be voting for impeachment now that we have it in proper form. I think it will pass the House, I hope, and then go to the Senate, and we can then start calling out to the American people the fact the Senate needs to act to remove Secretary Mayorkas.
Talk more about the reasons you believe that he should be removed.
So this takes us to the types of crimes that will be in the articles of impeachment. First of all, there'll be obstruction, his obstructing the implementation of the law. And as we believe it should be implemented, we don't think that part of what he's doing is falls within the policy context. And then there's several other crimes that are being alleged that have to do with interaction or facilitating cartel activity. And the entire situation on the border is controlled by the cartels. Each one of those individuals coming across has paid between $4,000 and $7,000 to the cartels each to get in. And they promise to pay that in the future under threat of damage or, you know, death to their family members that remain in these other countries. And so the cartels have an absolute lock on that. And there's facts that I'm not on the committee doing this. It's being done by Homeland, this oversight committee, that suggests that Secretary Mayorkas has been in some fashion involved in that space. I don't know the details, but those are the kinds of things that will be in the articles that we'll see, as I understand it, this coming week.
As Congress goes along here in the new year, where are we at on 2024 appropriations bills?
Well, not as far as we should be. That the appropriation bills, there are 12 of them. We've passed, I believe, 7, 5 remain unpassed. And when I say they've been passed, they've passed across the floor of the House. They have not passed through the Senate. And so the challenge with these bills is to get them over to the Senate so the Senate can in turn act upon them. The Senate has chosen not to act on them, on those that we have sent over. Part of the reason for that is that these bills have been amended in our House to add in conservative writers that we would like to see happen, but they have sometimes very little to do with with money. And as a result, they have to have enough to do with money to stay in the bill. But still, they would be not acceptable to the Democrats. And that's what's slowing things down, those additional pieces of those bills. And the total amount that we want to spend on so-called discretionary spending. And these issues get kind of complicated. But the bottom line is we've reached agreement finally. Most of us agree on the top line number of how much should be spent on discretionary items, and that should help us move the appropriation bills along over the next couple of weeks.
It seems like Congress increasingly has trouble getting through this appropriations process.
Well, if you look at the amount of a majority that we have, it's one vote. And so it takes 216 votes to pass something. We currently have 217 Republicans. The Democrats have 213 or 14. And so the change is a bit because if people get sick or resign, those numbers go up, or down. The challenge when you only have a one vote majority is that you have to get basically 99% of you to agree on the bill. And I'll tell you, Kyle, when you have 220 or 217 now people, getting them all to agree is extraordinarily difficult. And so that's why you see things slowing down. None of the Democrats are going to help move these bills. And so that means you've got to have unanimity among the Republicans, and that's been very difficult to achieve.
Do you see much crossover between parties, or are we kind of locked in each party going one direction and not a lot of cooperation between the two?
There's very little cooperation between the parties. And that was certainly true when I was in the minority for the first 2 years I was there. We seldom joined the Democrats on these bigger issues because the theory is, and it's a pretty good one, that if you have the majority, it's your job to govern the country. And that means that all of we Republicans should be getting on board and going in the same direction. But I will tell you, when you have as many independent thinkers as we have in our Republican caucus, getting everybody going in the same direction is quite challenging.
Well, and do you feel like amongst the GOP, it's even harder and harder to get consensus?
Well, again, this you have to kind of look at what we're voting on. If you look at what the Democrats were voting on, they were voting on giving money away in the trillions of dollars. Some have estimated it to be somewhere between $8 and $10 trillion. So getting everybody on the Democrat side to vote for spending more money was not as difficult as it is on our side, where we're trying to say, wait, we've got to slow the spending down. And so that's a lot much harder sell when you're busy trying to take presidents away from under the tree, as opposed to the Democrat approach, which is, you know, to be Santa Claus. So you saw Santa Claus in action for 2 years, and that's why we have the large inflation problems that we now face. We spent too much money. And the results are extremely challenging. Higher interest rates. I mean, look, a lot of people, credit cards, if they have credit card debt right now, good grief, the rates are horrific. And you can blame that a lot on how much that $10 trillion that got spent starting 3 years ago now.
Ian, let's talk about that in terms of the long-term implications of the federal budget deficit. When we look at the total number right now, and I think back a decade or two to what the federal budget was, or the deficit was at that point, are we ever going to be able to dig out of this?
Well, it certainly isn't going to happen within 1 year. It's going to, in fact, the most conservative of our team that actually, whose opinions I respect a lot, that has spent a huge amount of time trying to figure this out, suggests it's going to take between 5 and 10 years to have any chance at all of getting our deficit under control. Because once you start the spending train, it's extremely difficult to slow it down. And then we have to recognize that there are many things that people don't want less money spent on. And those fall within the mandatory spending space of Social Security and Medicare, our military, and our veterans. And those four areas are extremely important to people, and they don't want them to be reduced. And so that that spending in those spaces, the mandatory spending, takes up about 86% of our total spending. And so how that is going to ultimately work out is a question. As the baby boom generation gets older, those challenges will become even more difficult.
I understand you've got a subcommittee hearing next month, I believe it is, on wolves. Talk more about that.
So the reintroduction of wolves occurred, as so many things do, on the progressive side of the aisle, the Democrat side of the aisle, without appropriate thought given to who pays. So it's all very fine to say, well, let's reintroduce grizzly bears, let's reintroduce wolves, let's reintroduce whatever. But you've got to ask yourself who actually is going to bear the brunt of the damage that these animals, this reintroduction, is going to cause. And so it's my goal as chair of the Water, Wildlife, Fisheries Subcommittee of Natural Resources to hold hearings on these exact issues. I've already held several on who pays for the Endangered Species Act, who really pays, like the communities up in your area, for example, when the spotted owl came in and decimated the huge chunks of Oregon. So I'm doing the same thing now with the wolf, and probably will incorporate remarks about the grizzly bear. Who's actually bearing the brunt of that reintroduction? And we know here in Oregon, it's ranchers and it's others who see their calves being chewed up and torn apart, and their cattle herds traumatized by the reintroduction of the wolf. And why in the world aren't those who are so, you know, enthusiastic about reintroduction having to reach for their wallet and pay the freight for the damage that's being done?
As you have been talking with constituents recently, or just in terms of looking at mail, what are the big issues you're hearing from the most these days?
I think the economy is one. Folks are scared to death when they go to the grocery store and see these prices that have gone up and have not come back down. And that's true also for things you don't hear as much about, whether if you have a plumber come in, or an electrician, or a carpenter, or if you've gone into any kind of repair work for your car. It's just astounding how much more expensive everything is. I was talking to a restaurant owner here in Ontario just 2 days ago, and he was telling me how much his business had diminished. And he said, look, people are down at the grocery store in shock over how much it costs to feed their families. And so I hear a lot about that. I hear a lot about the border how we need to do all we can, which we Republicans are. But I think many times people forget we're one half of one third of the government, we Republicans. We're half of the House, and the House is one third of the government. And we're just, by the way, we're just a fraction over one half by one vote. And so we have to do our best to address both this higher price of groceries and the border, and there are other issues that are important, but those are probably the two ones that we hear the most about.
And while the statistics tell us the rate of inflation has gone down, obviously this is sort of a moving baseline. So the prices that went up maybe are not increasing as much as they were a year or two ago, but they certainly haven't returned to levels from, you know, 3 or 4 years ago.
Well, that's exactly right. You put it correctly. The prices went up, they stayed up, and they're still going up, but not as fast. And so if you go down to the store and reach for anything, it's amazing the price. I know because I do all my shopping in Washington, D.C., because I live in a small apartment and shop for groceries there. I'll tell you, you want to see scary prices, come to Washington, D.C. and go shopping. But those prices have not come down, and it's our job to do our best to protect the farmers and ranchers. And to that end, in my committee, I've had hearings on the Snake River dams and the desire by some Democrats to take out the lower four Snake River dams and drive utility electrical rates up. And that's another thing that I think most people are in sticker shock over, how much their heating and electrical rates are going up. We've got to do a better job for people in those areas.
As you deal with, of course, your district changing after the census, are you able to spend much time around Douglas County?
Right. So much of the time that we normally would have spent in the district, mine's, I think, that it's one of the largest districts in the United States. In fact, my district's bigger than the state of Washington. But part of the time that I would have been spending in that area, I've been spending in D.C. helping select a replacement speaker to take Kevin McCarthy's place. Mike Johnson, who, by the way, is a great guy and a good friend, and I think doing his best. I hope in the next couple of weeks to be down in that area. Certainly I will be in Medford and in Grants Pass, and I'm not sure how close I get to Roseburg, but it's my hope to spend more time there. The challenge, for example, just here in February, we were supposed to be in district for 2 weeks. Well, a big chunk of one of those weeks has now been taken away and added back to days we'll be in Washington, D.C. addressing the budget.
As we get ready to wrap up, you made an endorsement recently in the GOP primary. Talk about that.
Yes, I endorsed Donald Trump. The second time I've endorsed him, and I'm happy for the fact that he won Iowa. I think he will win handily in New Hampshire. I'm hoping he'll win in South Carolina. I have said that I would support whoever I thought the winner was going to be. We cannot have 4 more years of Joe Biden. We simply cannot. And so I'm happy to see that that Trump is winning. I think he is probably the one best suited, in fact, not probably, without a doubt, the one that is best suited to address the type of issues we face in the Northwest. And to that end, very quickly, I was able to reach out to former Secretary David Bernhardt, Secretary of the Interior, and ask his opinion on this. And he was totally supportive of President Trump.
All right. Second District Congressman Cliff Bentz, thanks for being on with us today.
Thank you, Kyle. I appreciate it.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.